This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back. The usual gang is here. Matt Larkin, Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. So much to talk about today in the hockey world. But you know what? Even though, I'm going to ignore that, even though there is
no,
a lot.
No, by saying you were going to ignore it.
I know. And when I said that, I realized I did that, okay? There's a lot to talk about in hockey right now, but first we need to just rehash a debate that happened in the office this morning because Ken is just so comically wrong. We were talking about etiquette for when you're watching live sports, and Ken thinks it's okay to spoil something if maybe you've PVR'd it or maybe you've had to pause the TV to go to the bathroom.
Wait a second.
Maybe there's an emergency, but Ken thinks it's fair game to just spoil everything. So Ken is just not with the modern millennium, I guess.
Okay, first of all, let's put this into context. I don't think it's okay to spoil it if someone says to me, I'm PVRing the game, and I don't want to know the score. If I know that the person is PVRing something and they don't want to know the score, I'm not going to spoil it. But I and the rest of the world shouldn't have to be silenced because some idiot wants to watch his beloved Green Bay Packers play 3 hours later. My point in all of this is if you love your team and you love this and you love that, then you lose the moral high ground if you don't watch when they're actually playing. I'm sorry. You lose that moral high ground,
and
Matt Larkin. You lose it.
What if you have to go to a funeral? What if you have to go to a funeral so you have to record the game and watch it later?
Okay, well, I think I would know if my friend was going to a funeral. And
yeah,
I wouldn't say that. And you know what? If you go to a funeral, Jesus, Matt, if you go to a funeral, who gives a who gives a darn about whether or not the team won or not?
Yeah, that's fair.
Somebody just died.
Now I've got a Sophie's choice for you, Ken. When the Olympics come around and the games are on in like the middle of the night, are you going to be okay if you find out? Are you going to stay up? Or are you going to be okay if people have the...
Of course I'm going to stay up. Of course I'm going to stay up.
Well, so, there
okay,
you go.
Here's the thing.
There's one person, IOC.
It's just a matter... Yeah, that's right. It's just
it's
a matter...
three more and we got the NHL beat because they said, oh, what, only three people will be watching?
The NHL?
Yeah, something like
that's
that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's just a matter of etiquette. It's as simple as saying, you just send someone the text during the game, hey, you watching? And then the person will say yes or...
Oh, come on, that's putting a lot...
PVRing, I'm 10 minutes behind.
I'm sorry, but that's putting far too much responsibility on
it's
everybody
one
else.
Extra text. If you're already going to text
everybody
the person...
else.
But if you're already planning to text the person about this crazy game, hey, did you see that Stephon Diggs touchdown? Just, hey, you watching? Yes. And then you say, wow, that was insane. That's how easy it is. Anyways, we digress a lot. Let's start talking about some hockey. In the news this weekend, Andrew Cogliano of the Anaheim Ducks, 830 games. The Ironman streak is over, suspended for 2 games. I guess first, let's just talk about the hit itself. And did you guys think it was the right decision to suspend him?
Yes. Yeah. Headshot. And as you pointed out, Matt, it happened in the context of a situation that had sort of gotten a little out of control with respect to people taking liberties with one another. They just had a couple of fights. And I think it's a really good message to send that, you know, in those kinds of situations, you still have to govern yourself accordingly. You have to play the game the way it's supposed to be played. And if you step outside the rules, you're going to get dinged for it.
Mm-hmm. I concur. I think it was the right call.
Yeah, and the thing is, context is everything. You know, Cogliano doesn't have a criminal record per se, and Kempe wasn't hurt, but those two factors... prior history, past offenses, and injuries, they only impact the length of a suspension.
Length, yeah.
They don't impact the decision to suspend.
Right.
And the narrative of the game. There are 3 fights 1 minute before Cogliano threw that hit. And I did talk to George Parros, the head of player safety, on Sunday night. And as he explained, you know, hey, it's the streak. It's too bad, but you have to treat it the same as any other play. And it was pretty clear.
Yeah.
It was a pretty clear headshot, so nothing you could really do. Mm-hmm. So we're in agreement there. The second element is, do you guys think that the streak should be considered active, or the fact that Cogliano is missing a game, even though it's not because of injury, does that mean, no, it's over? A missed game is a missed game.
I think it's over, and I will go back to Doug Jarvis, and his streak was ended on a healthy scratch.
Boom.
So I think you have to consider it the same thing, whereas like Doug Jarvis could have played that game, but his coach decided not to play him, and the streak ended there. So with Cogliano, it's like, you did something that took you out of your next game. It wasn't a matter, it's still super impressive that he hasn't been injured enough to miss a game in that whole span, but I think for the sake of the record, you have to say, like, the streak ends there, and congratulations on what was a very impressive feat.
Well, yeah, and I mean, all of me, every part of me wants to say that this streak should be over, but the devil's advocate in me says, you know, this is an unprecedented situation. You know, when Jarvis's streak ended, he was a healthy scratch, but he was available to play. He could have played, and he just wasn't good enough to play. When Steve Larmer's streak ended, he asked for a trade from the Chicago Blackhawks. They didn't trade him, and he sat out. Well, he could have chosen to play while having asked for a trade. So those two situations, I think, are a little different than this one. This one, the guy cannot play. There is no possible way, short of him going to court and getting a court injunction and overturning the suspension, could he possibly play. So, I mean, the devil's advocate in me says it's not really, you know, I mean, he had the choice not to throw the hit. Yes. He had the choice not to do what he did. So in that sense, you could say he had a choice. I'm really just trying to play devil's advocate here. I really do believe that
for the sake of entertainment.
But I think, you know, I think it's worth pondering, because I did call the league yesterday, and I talked to Coley Campbell about it, and I asked, you know, this was prior to the suspension coming down, you know, if Cogliano suspended, in the eyes of the league, is the streak over? And he said that determination hadn't been made. So it wasn't like a slam dunk, like it was like, yeah, oh yeah, if he's suspended, it's over. It was, you know, they had to kind of determine that. So.
Right, and I guess they must have as well, because later when I spoke to them, they spoke about it as if they knew the streak was over. I put it this way. Doug Jarvis should have played better. Andrew Cogliano should have played smarter.
Right. Devil's advocate.
Yeah, devil's. I'm going to advocate that advocate, yo.
Yeah.
yo.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. Oh, man.
Yo, what's the next question,
okay,
Matt?
Let's move on. If you go to our website right now, thn.com, Ryan's got a piece up right now about the Chicago Blackhawks, and this is something that a sentence that seems so unfamiliar in the last decade or so, the idea of the Chicago Blackhawks being a stellar team. But right now they're just hanging onto that playoff bubble. So I'm curious, Ryan, I guess you should start because you were already writing about this, but is it time for them to just acknowledge that their run is over and they have to start thinking about the future?
Well, I think it is, because, you know, as we speak, they're heading into their 5-day bye, and the two teams surrounding them, Colorado and San Jose, both have at least 3 or 4 games in hand on them. Colorado's a point behind. I think San Jose's a point above them. So you figure, you know, those teams are either going to pass them or have more of a cushion once Chicago gets back to playing hockey. At which point they'll be further down in the wild card race than they already are, and right now they are not in a wild card spot. So I think they really have to entertain this notion, because Corey Crawford's hurt. We don't know what's wrong with him or when he'll be back, and that's huge, because teams are figuring out Jeff Glass. It's a great story, but, you know, they're starting to figure him out. And, you know, you have Brent Seabrook as a healthy scratch the other day. You're already having problems overall defensively, and I think the big problem, and I say this in the blog, is there's not too much the Hawks can do. Like, they can't tear it down to the bone, because Seabrook is signed until 2023-24. His cap hit is nearly $7 million a season, so you just can't jettison that. Like, no team will touch that.
That's buyout. That's got buyout written all over.
Yeah, the buyout would go until 2030.
Unless Brent Seabrook gets an equipment allergy.
That's right. That's
you never
right.
know, right? It could happen.
That's right.
It happens in your mid-30s.
You never know.
Ouchie. I have an ouchie.
Yeah. So anyways, and then you look at some of the other players, like, you know, you're not going to trade Taves. You're not going to trade Kane. Even if you wanted to, they both have no move clauses and really long-term contracts, both north of $10 million. There's not a lot of rental options, which is pretty interesting. It's Patrick Sharp and
Tommy
Lance Bomo.
Tommy
Wingles, if you
Tommy Wingles would be a nice, reliable
human
sort
being.
Of guy to putting your lineup as a fourth liner.
Right.
Cody Franson, maybe. He's playing in the minors now.
Yeah, Franson was waived.
They don't have much to sell.
They don't have much to sell.
They don't have a lot to sell. And so, I mean, you are looking at these guys. And I guess, okay, go ahead. Trade them for a
maybe you get a second for Patrick Sharp because he's got three rings.
I don't know.
Maybe a third.
Maybe. Right? I'm not giving up a second for Patrick.
I'm thinking a fourth.
Yeah, fourth. Yeah, yeah. Oh, whatever.
Sorry, Patrick.
I'm bullish on Patrick Sharp. But yeah, given how much experience he has, and he has an $800,000 cap hit this year. So if you're getting him at the deadline, like, you're basically paying him like $64 for the rest of the season. I mean, obviously not.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get a couple of picks, and that's the tough situation they're in right now. I feel like the Hawks literally just have to wait for the next sort of year or two for some of their young players to mm-hmm. continue to mature and take on bigger roles, guys like Alex DeBrincat, John Hayden, and for some of their prospects to come up. So Dylan Sakura, Tim Soderlund was great at the World Juniors, guys like this. You're just kind of waiting for them to take on roles, and for now you kind of have some placeholders, and then you have that sort of old guard, the big money old guard, if you will, who hopefully can sort of help that next generation come up, and maybe you're back in the playoffs next year or the year after that. But I'm not sure how much they can really do right now. But I do think they should try.
Well, yeah, try. And like, trading Lance Boma, Patrick Sharp, Tommy Wingles, Cody Franson, that's not gonna dictate their playoff fortunes anyways.
Right.
So, you know, you trade, I guess, if you want, you try and trade those guys, get a couple of picks, and then you just go with it and see if you make the playoffs. And if you do, great. If you don't, then you kind of, you know, come back and drop it next year.
Yeah. And I think they only have two picks through the first four rounds this year. So, you know, filling that in, I think, would behoove them.
Interesting. And I see a big parallel between the Kings the last couple of years where they're victims of their own success. So you win the Stanley Cup, I guess we're going to have to give Marian Gaborik that big contract. Same goes for Dustin Brown, Anze Kopitar. And a year ago, we were looking at the Kings, I think pretty similarly. They were hanging on to the playoff bubble, but they had all these contracts that couldn't be moved. So they just sort of had to ride out the storm. And all of a sudden this year, you are seeing some young guys like Adrian Kempe stepping up.
Alexei, exactly.
Yeah. But the only difference is, in order to unlock some of these young players and find a way to get something out of a guy like Dustin Brown and rejuvenate Anze Kopitar, the Kings required a coaching change.
Yes.
So what I'm wondering now is, even though Joel Quenneville has been long, arguably the best coach in the game, do you reach a point where, just because of the fact you know you're sort of locked in with these veteran pieces, do you need to give them a jolt and bring in someone with a different mentality, a different system? Is it time to just shake hands with Quenneville and say, okay, it's been a great run, time to move on and go our separate ways?
Maybe, but I mean, when you looked at Los Angeles, when you looked at the Kings, you could say that coaching was one of the reasons why they weren't succeeding.
Right.
Because of the way they were being coached, because of the way their players were being deployed, and because of the system they were using. Not sure you can say that with Chicago. I mean, other than change for change's sake, which sometimes has to be done. I mean, sometimes it's over. It's over. Mm-hmm. And it's better for everybody if the guy just moves on. And maybe that's one of those cases. But I don't see, you know, I don't see people saying, oh, wow, Quenneville lost this game, or, you know, the way he used these guys resulted in them losing. So I think there is a difference there.
That's fair. And I think the reason for the team struggling, I mean, we knew it. We could have said it in September. It was their defense corps.
Yeah.
They had a no-name defense corps. They lost so many guys in the summer, namely Nicholas Chalmerson, but also even their veterans, you know, Brian Campbell, Johnny Oduya. We knew that was the problem, and it has been the problem. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
So that's fair. Staying in the West, I mean, the Calgary Flames, it's funny, about a month ago, it seemed like they were starting to slip, and I know even our resident Flames expert, Brian Costello, was saying he thought that he was unsure about Coach Glenn Gulson. All of a sudden, the Flames have won seven games in a row.
Are so-called.
So-called.
I'm using quote marks. So-called. What an expert.
He knows everything about the Flames. Come on. But they've won seven games in a row. They're absolutely on fire. Pun intended right now.
Stop it.
That was actually an accidental pun, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
But is it time to acknowledge the Flames as one of the best teams in the West? And do we think they are a Stanley Cup contender, or are they merely a hot team right now?
I'm still going with they're merely a hot team. And I'll tell you why. I mean, Colorado's won 6 in a row, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, are we talking about them as a Stanley Cup contender? No, we're not talking about them as a Stanley Cup contender because they've won 6 in a row. What I want to see from the Calgary Flames, and what's going to make me a believer about the Calgary Flames, is can they play better on home ice? They're 12-11 at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Now they'll be a much better team when Nihad Nenshi and all of the Calgary people realize that they got to give them a whole bunch of money to build a new arena.
Yeah.
They'll be better then. Yeah. Well, same way the Oilers are this year after they got that great big arena that everybody paid for. Yeah. Man, that's really paying off. Yeah. Anyhow.
That's worth $8 to watch the game on the concourse.
I digress. Yeah. But I want to see them play better at home. They've won 7 in a row. The first 2 or 3 were at home, and then the last 4 were on the road. So they still haven't proved to me that they can be a team where you come into the Saddle Dome and you go, oh, man, we're in for it tonight. You know, I want to see that from them because you can't be a good team unless you win on the road, generally speaking. But you're screwed if you can't win at home.
You got to win at home.
You got to win at home, and especially in the playoffs. You got to win at home. So I want to see this team put together, and I think they have 6 of their next 7 at home, if I'm not mistaken. And so if they go like 4-1-1 in those 6 games or 5-1, then we're starting to – then we got something going, in my opinion.
I'm a believer, particularly since the West is so wide open this year. There's so many contenders.
Yep.
And when I look at the Flames – do they have a starting goalie? Yes, they do. Mike Smith has been the best Mike Smith that we could have hoped for, so check mark there.
Right.
The defense core. We knew it was going to be a strength. It took some time for them to come together, and I think now, you know, and maybe we were sort of thinking like, oh, they'll be amazing right off the hop. But, you know, I mean, you have to develop chemistry and things like that. And with Travis Hamonic and TJ Brody, I think, you know, it took a little longer than expected, but
Dougie
that's
Hamilton's
fine.
Dougie Hamilton's really activating. Like, he's really jumping up into the
play. Dougie Hamilton, I think he had 2 goals last night.
Yeah,
So when you have that top 4 of Dougie, Gio, TJ, and Travis, I mean, that's really good, especially heading into the playoffs where you can shorten your bench. And then you say, do they have a number one center? Yes, they do. Sean Monahan. I know he's on the shelf right now, but, I mean, he'll be fine for playoffs. And you have that terrific possession line with Tkachuk and Backlund. Mm-hmm. So you have a little bit of depth there. And, you know, they could add at the deadline. I hear Patrick Sharp's available. Just kidding. but they have all the elements for me. So, you know, I'm not saying that they're going to be a favorite in the West, but I think they have a pretty good shot. There's not a lot of teams I would put ahead of them right now in the West.
I'm with you. And I actually, when we did our preseason predictions, I had the Flames winning the division. I think I was the only one who did. So I guess that's patting myself on the back-ish.
Well, they're not going to win the division. Well, what are you patting yourself on the
wrong.
Back
for? But they're still,
you're
I mean,
wrong.
No one expected Vegas to do anything. They're still better than the teams that we had ranked above.
Yeah, okay. And I go back to, they're not going to have 10 wins by 2018.
Yeah.
Okay? So you're wrong about Calgary. You're wrong about Vegas.
Because everybody thought Vegas was going to be incredible.
And you're patting yourself on the back for being wrong about
everybody,
stuff.
Hey.
That's great.
It was the easiest bet in town. Everyone knew Vegas was going to be amazing, right?
Yeah, keep patting yourself on the back for being wrong. Go ahead.
The thing about the Flames, right? We were worried about their forward depth. I think a lot of us were. But some of the pieces we thought were missing might be there. And a lot of people talked about the winger to play with Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. Michael Froland's been way better than I ever expected. I had no idea he was going to be this good. I thought his ceiling, like the amount of goals he has in half a season, I thought that was his full season ceiling.
Hmm.
Never saw that coming. And, you know, we were waiting and waiting to see if Sam Bennett was going to become the third line center. And it's Mark Jankowski instead. And Jankowski, the late bloomer from Stanstead High School, drafted in 2012. Took him 5 years to get here. But he's got that long reach. He plays a strong two-way game. And it's almost like, is he a young Joel Otto, his style of game? Maybe not as tough, but the big, rangy guy who can take draws and is strong on his skates and long reach. I don't know. But to me,
Shout out to Stanstead College.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so I don't know.
That Sagan scored this weekend.
That's true.
Hey, guys.
Good for him. Trade deadline is coming reasonably soon. And, I mean, there are a lot of names that are floating out around there. But the names that we know are going to be going somewhere are the guys who are the pending UFAs, the potential rentals. So I'm curious, do you guys think that an Evander Kane is the best piece on the market? Or after seeing, you know, he's getting in a fight in practice, are there still concerns about his character? So is he not the best rental piece out there? Yeah. Is it Mike Green? Is it dependent on team needs? Or who do you guys think right now?
See, in a perfect world, Mike Green, the Washington Capitals reacquire Mike Green and win the Stanley Cup. Like, how great would that be?
They could really use him.
How great would that be? That you know, right shot defenseman. You know, that's kind of what, that's sort of what they need right now. They don't need much else. That would be a perfect scenario. I'm going to put out a dark horse by the name of Rick Nash. Who would have ever thought that Rick Nash would be a dark horse in anything? But as a trade deadline acquisition, you've got to be able to, I know it's still a short period of time, but you still got to be able to carry that cap hit, or a portion of that cap hit. I think he's a guy, he can kill penalties, he's a big presence, he can score, he's the kind of guy that I think in the right situation could get on a real kind of, get on a roll and, you know, really make things happen. And so, you know, so he go, if he goes to a team where he's kind of, you know, that second to third line guy, I think that would be a great fit for a real contending team. Like, I think he would be, he's the kind of guy that you'd look back to and you go, yep, that's what put him over the top. That's what it did. That's what did it. You know?
Yes. Interesting.
The rich man's Michael Hanzus.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, Hanzus from a couple of years ago. You're not talking about
not now.
I'll give that to you.
Yeah, I think Mike Green's probably the answer. But another sort of dark horse that I would throw out there in the same vein of Rick Nash, and it obviously it's standings dependent, is Joe Thornton.
And again,
you got to be able to carry the cap hit, even though it is just for the remainder of the season. But again, like, you look at a guy who's got tons of experience, great size, you know, really protects the puck, can win you draws, great guy in the room.
He's been terrific too.
And he becomes that.
He's been really good.
Yeah, lately. And he becomes that totem for a team. Let's win it for
he's
Joe.
He's the right boy.
Joe's never won it. We got to do it for Jumbo. Even though he just got here, got to do it for Jumbo. Give him a tug on the beard for good luck.
You know what's weird, too? The Sharks, I mean, they're out of the playoffs. They're on pace for 100 points, and they're out of a playoff spot right now.
It's wild.
I've never seen that
before.
That's
insane.
As a team, I don't think a team has ever missed the playoffs with 100 points.
Not a chance.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
What a bizarre year, especially in the West. I mean, to me, the best pieces available are not rentals. It's Mike Hoffman. It's Max Pacioretty.
Sure.
But if we're talking strict rentals.
Yeah, I thought the parameters of the conversation were rentals.
If we're talking strict rentals.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still tempted by Evander Kane because the skill set he brings is so unique. Yep. He's just powerful. He can score the goals. He loves to shoot the puck. He is, of course, risky. But to me, Kane, he's not the guy for a team that has a lot to lose and is already in a position of power. But for a team that's on the bubble and could afford to take that risk, I think he's a very interesting fit. So let's say a team
like Dallas or maybe
Boston. A team, so we know Boston's good. The standings say they're good, but I don't think anyone thinks Boston could take Tampa Bay. So maybe Boston's willing to roll the dice and they catch lightning in a bottle with Evander Kane and he gets hot.
No pun intended again.
Yeah, again. What the heck?
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
And I will say, I mean,
there's a trade brewing here, okay?
Man.
Yeah. I will say that if you're getting Evander Kane at the deadline, it's almost like he, you know, if there was some sort of personality clash, there wouldn't be time for it. You know, it's like he wouldn't have time to wear out his welcome if you're getting him at the deadline because he's going to be a UFA in the summer. Yeah. It's just like it's playoff run. It's like we're just doing this. Evander, you're on that wing.
And I mean, Evander Kane is smart enough to know, like, I'm playing for my contract next year, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm playing for something here, so.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like, on a team like Boston, if you stick with that example, it's like, if Kane acted up, like, Zdeno Chara is having none of that. and it's funny, Tyler Seguin told me this last year that in his first practice with the Bruins, that he was kind of melting off, and then Chara just, like, grabbed him and manhandled him. It's like, no, that's done.
Why would Tyler Seguin, in his first practice, start mouthing people?
He got some swagger. First scrimmage or something.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so if you put Kane on a team that has a really established, like, one of the better leaders in the game, and Chara would be one of them, I think that gets snuffed out in a hurry.
Yeah.
Let's go to some reader questions. We've got a few good ones. This one is from Ben Thielman, and he wants to know, what is happening with Jaromir Jagr? Is he done in the NHL? It's a good question because I find, if you see on Twitter, there are so many conspiracy theories going out there. But the one we know is not true. He's not suiting up for the Czech Republic in the Olympics. He truly is retired. But what do you guys think is going on with Jagr? Is he done?
Is he done in the NHL? I think he's done. I thought he was done before this year. I think what he'll do is he'll go back. He'll probably play for Kladno because he owns the team, and he'll go back and he'll play, and then he'll try again next year. And maybe somebody will, probably won't. I would suspect he's done.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, the pace of the game. It's time. It was a remarkable first ballot Hall of Fame career. Nothing left to prove. And, yeah, if the offers aren't coming, then I think you have to say, like, yeah, that's it. Like, 31 teams have said their piece on the matter.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, Ken and I can always debate. I mean, the possession numbers were still there, but the body's not. He just couldn't get healthy anymore.
What's the debate? What's
the saying? He was still an effective player.
What's the debate?
Still an effective player.
Really?
That's the debate.
Really?
His body is failing him.
The funny thing is that it, about that is that effective players usually play. See, that's the thing, right? Like, they usually play.
Well, when they play, they're effective.
Yeah, but if you don't, if you're not effective when you play, you don't play.
Yeah, but
I don't know where you're having
it. It's his body that's broken down on him, not his game. His physical body is eroding. That's why he's not playing.
Okay, but he's not effective because I never said he was a bad player.
Saying effective players, as in when he's playing, he is effective. I'm not saying effective not
There's people sitting here right now going, I'm never getting that time back.
I know.
They're just going, I just what you're saying right now. I'm never getting that
because you're picking
back.
Apart my
no,
language
picking
and saying
apart.
Something that makes no
picking
sense.
Picking apart.
Makes
are you
no
serious?
Sense. You got to back me up on this. What the hell is he talking about?
I think you're
effective
coming
player means when he's on the ice playing hockey, he's good. It's very simple.
But what I would say is when he was with Calgary this year, he wasn't very good.
I mean,
and he was on the ice playing hockey with them, apparently.
But what I'm saying,
but his body is breaking.
His
down.
Possession numbers were good, and he made the other players with him better. Jankowski
possession numbers
is. I think he's better because of the time he spent playing with Jágr. I think Jágr has that effect on others.
Yeah, when Mark Jankowski gets inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame,
which he's
going to say is, I want to thank Jaromír Jágr for playing 3 games with me, and boy, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for him. Smarten up.
Yeah, I almost feel like Jágr should just be like an assistant coach at this point. Yeah. Player/assistant coach, but a healthy scratch most nights.
Yeah, he comes. He's a fill-in. He comes in, he plays in the fourth line, like 5 games a year.
Yeah, like, hey, Yags, you know, Matt Stajan's not feeling well tonight. Do you think you could play a couple of shifts? Although, yeah, no problem.
I think he's still better than
Here's
Matt
your
Stajan.
Clipboard.
Yeah.
Wow, that Matt Stajan has 1 more goal than he did. I don't know. Did Jágr even score a goal?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I'm not sure. I hope he did. I hope so.
Well, that was spirited.
Next question is from Ethan Babcock, and this is a doozy. Ethan says, how legitimate of a cup threat are the Golden Knights actually? I know what their record says. He doesn't spell the word there properly.
No, I know.
This
I got
the wrong
that.
Version
I saw
of it,
too.
But
yeah,
we'll
yeah.
let that slide, Ethan.
No, we didn't. We're not letting it slide. You just said it.
You called him out.
You
all
keep
right.
doing that.
All right.
Stop being so passive aggressive. But,
he says he's having trouble buying it. So what do you think? I mean, it's a good point. We know that this season is unprecedented. We know that they're the greatest expansion team in, I guess, sports history already. They're going to break the NHL record for expansion teams by probably 40 points. But are they going to be remembered as just an amazingly cute and fuzzy story? Or should we start thinking of them as one of the best teams in the NHL and a legitimate threat to win the whole thing?
There's a saying in hockey, you are what your record says you are. And he knows, Ethan even said, he knows what their record is. What their record is. T-H-E-I-R. He said that. And you are what your record says you are. So they are a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. There's absolutely no question in my mind. I don't think they're going to win it. But would anybody be surprised if they won 2 rounds? 2 playoff rounds?
No. I
would
see them winning.
Be surprised?
I could see them winning a round.
Oh,
at least.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're going to be playing the 8th-seeded team.
Yeah. Well, so, and the thing is, too, at the halfway point, they were 18-2-1 at home, on pace to tie the single-season record for 36 home wins. And as it stands right now, Vegas would have home ice through to the Stanley Cup final. They've lost They lost 2 in 21 games. So the Vegas flu is real. It's been proven
A coach told me that. His exact words were, the Vegas flu is a real thing. Yeah. I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was, but he actually said that. He said the Vegas flu is a real thing.
Wow. The irony would be if, like, somehow their first round matchup was against Dallas, who has beaten them against at home.
Yeah.
And they're like, come on. here's my thing. I think they can win a round, but I don't necessarily like their long-term prospects in the playoffs this year because I can see teams already being like, you know where we're staying when we play in Vegas? Henderson, Nevada, or whatever far-flung suburb of Vegas there is, where it's like, we are going to a hotel that has windows, and, you know, we have a normal schedule. And I also think that for players, when it gets to playoffs, all of a sudden, it is super business. So,
yeah.
In the regular season, we're like, ah, it'll be fine. We'll walk the strip for an hour or so, and that turns into 2 hours or whatever happens. You get a place, everybody's got to watch, so you know what time it is, and I think teams are just going to, like, clamp down on what they do when they're in Vegas because it's the playoffs.
See, if I'm a team that's playing Vegas in the playoffs, I say, we are staying on the strip.
Really?
That's exactly where we're going to stay. We're staying right in the middle of everything.
Oh.
Damn right. First of all, because you want them to stay out in Henderson? Okay, that creates a disadvantage right there. Because now it's a half an hour to the rink or whatever it is to go for your morning skate and to do everything you need to do, right? And secondly, the players will be sitting there going, oh, this is great. This is lots of fun. We're here like in the best city in the world. You know what? I think at some point you got to let your players decide what they want to do. And you got to treat them like adults. And so to me, and you can't use it as an excuse. You can't. It's like, no, we're putting you right in the middle of this. You know, yeah, sure. Go to the casino after the skate for 2 hours and have a bit of fun. Or on the off day, have some fun. Go see Celine Dion, whatever you want to do. But I think that when they are there, when they're in Vegas, you put them right in the middle of it because they have to deal with it. And you expect them to be adults, and you expect them to act accordingly. And during the playoffs, as you say, Ryan, it's all business. I don't think teams, well, there's some, maybe some players, but I think most teams would be like, no, we're good.
Most, but I mean, it's been proven in the past that they're human, right? Alexander Radulov and Andre Gustinson are the
right?
most recent examples. So you might have one of those guys that just has the temptation all around him, right? You never know. It could happen.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why so far it's being proven to be a real thing, this Vegas flu.
Yeah, I think too, part of that is because it's new.
Yes.
You know, I think once teams go through there and do the cycle a couple of times, I think it becomes just another city.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's no New York flu, right?
That's true.
I mean, really, and New York's like the greatest city in the world, right? So
it's weird, you know, New York is called the city that never sleeps, which always bothers me. I mean, Vegas is the city that never sleeps. Come on. Like, it literally, people literally don't go to sleep in Vegas.
Yeah.
That's just a little
New York
tangent.
Was there first.
Yeah, I guess.
But in answer to the question, I do think that, I think we have to consider them a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. I don't see any way around it. Really, like...
They're there.
The body of work would suggest that these guys are doing everything right.
I think the only thing that could happen is right now they're also buoyed by the no expectation factor, right? There's
right.
no pressure. There could not be less pressure on the team this year. But if you enter the playoffs as a one seed, suddenly that all changes. And it's a relatively inexperienced group of players. Guys like William Karlsson and Jonathan Marchessault. Marchessault, I guess, got a cup of coffee with Tampa Bay in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, most of the guys in this team don't have a ton of big game experience. I mean, Fleury does,
James Neal, but if
you look at it as a whole, it's still a relatively young team. So I don't know. Is it possible they could crumble in that situation?
Sure, it is.
Maybe.
Sure, it is.
But on the other hand, this is a team that, since the beginning of the year, has had a collective chip on its shoulder. And, I mean, it was great when they were forging bonds between each other because it was essentially like, you know, the island of misfit toys. It's like nobody wanted us. All our teams gave up on us, in, you know, either by the expansion draft or via trade. And we're going to prove them wrong. Even if they go into the playoffs as a one seed, I guarantee a bunch of people, like, you know, there'll be pundits that'll say, like, oh, no, Vegas is going out in the first round. And that will be bulletin board material because I think this group will take any edge they can and say nobody believed in us. And, like, I know athletes love to play that card all the time. No pun intended, Vegas. But
wow.
But they actually can. You know, that psychology is there with them where, no one thought we would make the playoffs.
And they'll double down on it.
And they'll double down. They've got a pair of aces up their sleeve. They will look
and
at the
really
odds.
They're playing with house money.
They're playing with house money. But they can actually look at the odds and say, in the preseason, you know, odds were like 10,000 to 1 of us even making the playoffs. No one believed in us. And they can actually use that because it's actually legitimate.
That's fair.
Nobody did believe in them.
And I don't know about you guys, but I'm so excited for the playoffs just for the Vegas factor alone, because I just want to see what happens.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see what happens to these Golden Knights in the second half.